We're holding this membership campaign today because public radio relies on the support of real people, people like you, in order to continue its mission of bringing you the quality and substance you expect every time you turn to this place on your dial. Your financial support makes everything you count on from public radio possible. Some of the most memorable things you can hear on the radio are stories people bring back from their travels. These personal stories inspire me, and I hope they inspire you too. One of our guests on Travel with Rick Steves has written books about building and restoring yachts and sailboats. He's also written novels inspired by living on a sailboat for years at a time. In his memoirs, Ferenc Matej describes transforming a 13th century Tuscan friary into his dream house, starting a winery, adjusting to the ways things are done and sometimes not done in Tuscany, and the valuable life lessons the people of rural Italy have taught him. One area of his fascinating life that he's yet to write about are the dramatic events he witnessed as a schoolboy, just 11 years old, in communist Budapest. A popular uprising attempted to overthrow the country's Soviet rule back in 1956. Ferenc ended up as part of a wave of emigrants that left Hungary for the United States and later settled in Canada. We asked Ferenc to tell us a little about those turbulent days in his homeland. He told us it's the one thing he's had difficulty writing about because after all these years, the emotions of those days are still so highly charged.
Yeah, I just turned 11 during the revolution when we actually, for 7 days, kicked the entire Russian army out of Budapest.
So you left when you were 11 years old in 1956, and that was really the first really exciting uprising against communism.
It was the first physical one because the Prague one was much more, wasn't violent like ours was. And we sort of went from nothing to bloodshed in about 24 hours.
And you remember as a child the stirring work anthems?
I was 10 years old then, but one day by the railroad station, all of a sudden, this mob of people, which you don't see because it was illegal to gather. My God, it was just one radio station, communist, nothing, all this was illegal. This mob coming up the street waving Hungarian flags with a red star torn out of them. And this truck goes by, my mother's on a, waving a flag with a star torn out of it. She says, "I'm sorry I'm late, but we have a revolution." It started October 23rd. In the evening, we actually beat the Russians. The whole army withdrew, and we went to the UN to ask for recognition of a new government. And then November 4th, on a Sunday morning, we heard faraway cannon shots, and 2,000 Russian tanks and about 3 dozen airplanes started bombing Budapest, and they swept all across the country. And some people resisted, and the Corvin cinema actually held out for a couple of weeks. But then, of course, again, second of firepower.
What can you do with bombs and so on, you know?
But it was so spontaneous. I don't know how it happened with almost overnight. There was a declaration by university teachers, actually. They wanted to get the old flag back, with the Russian troops out of Hungary, freedom of speech, freedom of gathering, simple requests. And all of a sudden, I went to the radio station to have this read out. And one of the guards fired into the crowd, and some, I can't remember whether a child either got killed or badly injured. And that sparked the entire city was on the streets. And the biggest thing we did instantly, this is at night on the 23rd, this crowd, about 100,000 people gathered in Stalin Square with a statue.
Statue of Stalin.
Oh, my God, it was bigger than anything you've ever seen in your life. And we went there, and they read out these points, and some people sang the national anthem, and a truck came by with a cable and started to pull Stalin down, and somebody showed up with an acetylene torch and started cutting behind his knee this gargantuan bronze statue.
Because there were statues of Stalin all over Eastern Europe, but physically, they don't remain. They were so hated by the people.
And this is the most enormous of them all. When we pulled it down finally after about 3 or 4 hours, it was the most emotional moment of my life. And little ladies were kicking it and spitting on it for all the oppression we had for 11 years from the Russians. For Hungarians, who were a 1,000-year free nation, arrogantly proud, disgustingly proud almost. But
there was a statue in Berlin like that, and all that remains of it is part of his mustache, which is a centerpiece in a little nostalgic restaurant.
That's great.
It's a theme restaurant that serves dreary food from the 1960s.
But it's amazing that, you know, what you can do with, we had nothing. I mean, even the Hungarian army wasn't allowed to have much. So the army that came over and joined us had nothing. So we fought with bottles filled with gasoline and wicks against tanks, basically. And the invention and creativity, you guys, like, Hungarians used lard to cook with, right? So they actually used to grease the cobblestones on the hills, which made the tanks skid out of control. I mean, can you fighting a tank with a sandwich spread, you know?
Was it the Czechs or the Hungarians who anticipated the Soviets coming in and they turned all the signs around so they didn't know where to go?
Half the Soviets thought they were going to Egypt to fight for the Suez Canal, you know, but they were diverted to Hungary instead. Right. So looking for the canal,
And that was 1956, when the rest of the world just looked on and really didn't come to your aid.
We actually formed a government and asked for UN to recognize us, but the Suez Canal crisis was on, of course, yeah. And that's much more important to the world. And it was election year, and this is on October 23rd, 10 days before election in America. Plus, it was, you know, could have led to a world war.
But you had some moderate communist leaders who were really quite inspirational. Imre Nagy.
Yeah, yeah.
And great, he was, courageous guy. And then he was just brutalized after that, wasn't
he? Yeah, well, he was arrested and taken to a meeting and never seen again.
What is really tough right now is the secret files of all of these people who were kept down by the communist governments in Eastern Europe are now open to the public. But people have to have this gut-wrenching decision. Do I go in and see the secret police files and find out which one of my friends and relatives were informing on me to the secret police?
That was the scariest part.
Or do I stay blissfully ignorant of that?
They managed to set neighbor against neighbor, you know, somehow. Yeah. And that is the scariest part of the totalitarian government.
They played that off expertly, too. They knew how psychologically to play neighbors against neighbors.
Yeah. Well, my aunt...
It was devious.
It was little sculptures out of bread. And it was sort of sardonic or sarcastic sculptures of the party leaders.
Yeah.
She was put away for 2 years into a corrective institute.
Because she had some little sarcastic
Because she criticized
caricatures.
I mean, you know, how subversive is a bread sculpture that, you know, a few of your neighbors see? You know,
yeah.
So the entire building obviously got on edge after that, not knowing who turned her in and what would happen to you if you did something similar, you know.
It must be so amazing for you to go back after what you
It is through. Thrilling, you know. It's just the amount of creativity that comes out of a nation when it's free. You know, I tried to write a novel about this, and I got to about page two before I got blinded by tears. I cannot believe how emotional recalling the simplest stuff about this bloody thing is.
That's author Ferenc Matej, telling us about the unforgettable days he lived through as a boy in 1956 in Hungary. You and I may never have to experience social upheaval like that in our lifetimes. But hearing the stories of people like Ferenc, who lived through such historical events, and then hearing how his travels and living in other countries since then have shaped who he is today, is an inspiration. These are the authentic and engaging stories of real people that are the hallmark of public radio. And it's all presented without a partisan agenda. That's part of what makes this station a real refuge, a treasure on your radio dial. We're asking for listeners like you to step up and show your support for this non-commercial radio service. Contributions from listeners like you are the lion's share of the revenue that allows us to broadcast high-quality programming all year long. Thanks for making sure we meet our goals and making this drive yet another example of how people in our community understand the value of public broadcasting and how they come together to make a difference.